This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Forsaken. Hello and welcome to episode 89 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who won't turn into a liquid despite ingesting a fair quantity of them in various bubbly forms. It's my good friend Dave. Good evening. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm not quite sure exactly what you meant by your introduction.
That exactly.
So, yes, all is well here. Thank you very much indeed. It's, I don't know. I think summer's trying to come back. It's trying to come back as a sequel for 2021, but it's not really happening at the moment. How are things in Switzerland?
Very rainy, very windy. We've got weather alerts for heavy rains and flooding. So,
oh no,
not exactly the summer I expected. But I'm going away in the south of France for a few days, so I shall get the sun over there.
I was about to say that because I knew you were going en vacances, but I didn't know whether you were going away from this lovely weather system that you find yourself in at the moment. Or Yes.
On tonight's episode, we're going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 17, The Forsaken. And we will probably talk about that episode and maybe have a bit of trivia.
Maybe so.
So, if you don't have anything to add to this introduction,
nope,
we shall then move on with the review of The Forsaken. So, in the teaser, a delegation of Federation ambassadors on a fact-finding mission to the wormhole is visiting Deep Space Nine. Dr. Bashir sits in Quarks with said delegation, Lojal, a Vulcan, Vadosia, a Bolian, and Taxco, an Arbazian. I've never heard of Arbazans before, but hello
to nice
every
to meet you.
Arbazans listening to us. The ambassadors pester him in every way imaginable. He cannot please them, no matter how hard he tries. Their conversation is interrupted as the fourth ambassador, Roxana Troi, cries out from the double table.
Ah.
And I recognized Majel Barrett from you know, just the sound of her voice.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's trouble. That's trouble.
I have a comment about the voice thing later on, because I incorrectly assumed a different character on the station. I was going to ask how they were going to do that, but I'll talk about that a bit later.
Okay. Roxana's Latinum air brooch has been stolen. Quark claims his establishment is not responsible for lost or stolen items, but the Betazoid seizes his lobe and demands that everyone in the room be strip searched until her brooch is found.
Yeah, not just a search, a strip search.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What did you expect from Roxana Troi?
No less.
No less. Fortunately, Chief of Security Odo arrives and, after a few brief questions, glances around the bar and apprehends a Doctorian pickpocket who happens to be in possession of the brooch. Amazed, Roxana asks Odo how he solved the mystery, and he explains that since she couldn't sense any guilt in the room, the thief had to be someone immune to telepathy, such as a Ferengi like Quark. However, as Odo doesn't believe Quark would stoop down to petty theft, he instead focuses on a member of the Ferengi species' distant relatives, the Dopterians. As Odo leaves, Roxana commands Bashir to tell her everything he knows about the station's security chief. And it becomes apparent that Odo has caught the ambassador's eye. And I was like, Odo, you're in trouble.
See, that set the tone for the entire episode now.
Yeah.
Yes.
when Odo said that, you know, Quark wouldn't do some petty theft, he said, thank you. And I almost...
Yes.
You know, thought he would say, I think, but he didn't say it, but I read that in his eyes.
No, absolutely. He took that as a complete compliment, even from Odo. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so once Roxana Troi is interested in someone, it usually means trouble for that person.
Yeah, once the claws are in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, uh-huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All right, that was the teaser. Let's move on to Act 1. In Ops, Chief O'Brien struggles to force the Cardassian computer system to work, as it has a tendency to argue with his suggestions, to give its opinion, and even on occasions to overrule O'Brien's requests. With the help of Anara, the Chief tries to operate the computer manually, but continues to have trouble. The problem is so bad, O'Brien explains to Commodore Sisko, that he is seriously considering completely overhauling and replacing the computer, a procedure that would take around 2 to 3 years to complete. Sisko employs his dry humor, but O'Brien is clearly too frustrated. Sisko allows him to do what he must.
Yeah, Sisko knew straight away when he tried to make light of it that it was a mistake.
Whoops.
Whoops, sorry. Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, O'Brien didn't take that too well.
No. So this is the bit I was talking about earlier, where you got Majel Barrett starring in the episode as a character, and then mm-hmm. the computer voice, which I assumed with no knowledge would have been Majel Barrett, but it wasn't. Yes. It was someone else. And that sort of vocal just juxtaposition was really quite confusing for me. Because I expected to hear Majel Barrett as the computer. I'd never looked into it, so I didn't realize it wasn't her.
Oh, I thought she did the Deep Space Nine computer too. The voice, I really thought it was Majel Barrett. Yeah,
so did I, but it isn't. And I'm guessing that's because it's not a Starfleet computer, it's a Cardassian computer. Yeah. So it's a different voice module. But it's played by a completely different voice actor.
Well, she does have a voice very close to Majel Barrett's.
Yes, she does.
All right. Well, I've learned something today.
Mm. Yeah. Anara. Is she a newly named character? We haven't actually met her before, have we?
Absolutely. She's so new and so named that I thought she was going to die.
Exactly where I was going with this. The only thing that was missing was a red top.
There's not a lot of red shirts on Deep Space Nine.
Sisko has one.
Yes.
No, you're right, though.
As well as Picard.
Picard was... Well, this command color.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, absolutely. I had that same fear that brand new character, we may have seen her before, but she'd never been named before. And I was thinking, new named character, bye-bye.
Sorry, dude. Just then, Bashir and the other three ambassadors arrived in the turbolift, having insisted in seeing Ops. Commodore Sisko is forced to make conversation, but saved when a mysterious probe comes through the wormhole. The ambassadors interject a bit during the analysis, as Lojan assumes Dax is only a young woman who is without the necessary experience, and Vadosia seems intent on being involved in what may be the first contact with a new species. However, Bashir and Sisko are able to stun them down. Sisko assures them there will be a briefing later.
Backseat so drivers.
He says the briefing will be at 0400 hours or something something like that.
Yeah.
So is it 4 in the morning or something?
That's what 0400 means. But again, what is morning? They're in a geostationary space station. So... Mm-hmm. It's going to be a simulated solar cycle.
Yes, because it's not even geostationary. It's just in a fixed point in space. It doesn't revolve around
geostationary Bajor. Implies that it would be moving with the planet. No, you're right. I got that wrong. Yeah.
So there's no day and night cycle on the station?
No.
Well, probably not. So unless the wormhole revolves around the star, which it doesn't.
No.
As far as we know.
What they might do is pick a particular point on the planet and they track that as it goes past.
Yeah. Maybe.
To work out what the time is, maybe.
Yeah, so they artificially place Deep Space Nine in one of the time zones on Bajor, so they can have a 26-hour cycle, yet the light on the station wouldn't move unless they have some tinted glass or something to simulate day and night.
Perhaps. It's not impossible. One of our computer suites at work is right in the core center of our data center, which means it has no windows. It has no visibility to the outside world at all. But they've put in the ceiling, a simulated sun. So you can see where the sun should be so that the people that are working there, their body clocks react to the fact they're in
nice
a simulated solar environment. Yeah.
That's cool.
Which I think is quite cool.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Roxana finds Odo in the security office and flirts heavily with him. Hmm. She's fascinated by the idea of being with a shapeshifter. However, the constable is visibly disquieted by her advances. He pretends to hear a comm signal and leaves in a hurry. I think it's one of my quotes of the week. Is that the comm? Yes, I think it's the comm. Oh, I have to go. Sorry.
Yeah, no one's falling for that one.
No. But I understand. I understand.
So my quote of the week was in this scene when Troy said, "Is Odo your first or last name?" And Odo went, "Yes."
Yes.
It's true. It's either his first or his last name.
Either or, yes. Mm. So it's a short review this week. Even though the last act is a little bit longer,
but yeah.
It is a short review. And we are already on Act 2. O'Brien and Dax interface with the probe, and the chief finds that the station's computer is cooperating surprisingly well. However, the probe's computer system is unlike anything they've ever seen before. After a while, Anara finds the probe is made out of a type of conrudium alloy, when suddenly the computer says it's completed an analysis much earlier than expected. O'Brien and Dax come over to see that the probe is just a powerful computer, no communications or science modules, or hint of its origin or mission. So I'm going to come back on what you said last week or the week before, in that every episode they go and invent a new material, a new kind of alloy. And yes, this week being in the bingo of new material is the Condorium alloy.
And I have some news for you about Corundium.
Oh.
This is the only episode in which it is ever mentioned.
Oh, I am so surprised.
I think that should be a regular feature then. We should do a new material of the week.
Yes. Maybe keep a list of them or something.
Yeah.
What they're made of and stuff like that.
Yes.
And we never found out what self-sealing...
stem bolts.
Stem bolts.
Yes.
Stem bolts.
Well, again, I don't think they appeared in any other episode except the one.
No?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Odo passes by the group on his way to Sisko's office and complains to the commander about Loxana's advances. But Sisko is unable to help him. He suggests he handled the matter delicately. But Odo says he doesn't handle delicacy well.
No.
No, he doesn't. As he leaves, Roxana manages to catch up with Odo despite his attempts to avoid her. Well, it was not very subtle, but oops, he turned around. She says she's reserved a holosuit, yes. She says she's reserved an holosuite with Quark for a picnic. Odo says Odo says he's not available and tries to re-enter the turbo lift, but she follows him in. Intent on having a picnic with him, she says she will send for a picnic basket. He finally goes on a rant about how different he is, but she ignores it. Of course she does.
Yeah.
Before they reach their destination, however, the turbo lift stops abruptly as the station system begins acting up. Dax attempts to beam them out with the ops transporter, but something causes it to malfunction. Roxana happily says, "Alone at last." And I thought, yeah. Although you're in big trouble now.
Serious trouble.
Yeah.
At this point in the episode, I'm thinking to myself, you did this, didn't you?
Ah.
It just seemed a little bit too convenient that Odo and Loxana are in the turbo lift and, oh dear, something's wrong. It's not working anymore. We are stuck here. Oh, what a shame. Wink.
I understand why you were thinking that, but I don't think Roxana is capable of doing something like that.
Well, don't even turbo lifts have a button that says stop?
Yes. Yes.
So, in hindsight, I realise it wasn't a very good conclusion to come to, but at the time, I'm thinking, this is just too coincidental.
True. I don't know if turbo lifts have a stop button or emergency stop button, but I know what they don't have is a safety door, because you could see the shaft going on and quite fast actually.
Mm.
So we've already mentioned that for the turbo lift, well, the lift in Ops that doesn't have any barrier of any kind.
It's funny you should mention that. I think it was last week's episode or the week before, where we saw it might have been Cisco and someone else getting into a turbo lift and the doors closed. And then it went down to Ops that had an open plan entrance.
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird. Very weird. That doesn't compete with the turbo lift in Discovery.
The
whole thing.
that is just weird beyond weirdness.
Yeah. But I thought this is not safe at all. I mean, if they ever have a safety review of the station, there will be, you know, the turbo lift would be stopped immediately.
This is not safe.
No, this is an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
It was funny when Roxana entered the turbo lift. She turned around, knocked on the back plate of the turbo lift and said, "2 upper pylon, 3. As if she was asking the turbo lift.
Don't you ask the turbo lift where to go?
Yeah, but you don't turn around and knock on the back plate to do that. You don't have to wake the turbo lift up.
Could that not have just been her exuberant personality? That she knew she could just say it out loud. But obviously she's trying to court Odo at this point. She's trying to impress him.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
And then she added, "I always wanted to see an upper pylon 3. I was like, okay, whatever.
There are some weird words coming out of Floxana's mouth at the moment.
I wonder how much is written and how much is from Magic Barrett.
Yes.
If that had been Tig Notaro, that's her name, I think.
Tig Notaro, yeah.
Yeah, I would have said that was ad lib, but I don't know. From Magic Barrett, I don't know.
I can't remember if I told you. You know, we asked the question before about whether Tig Notaro's, I keep saying that, Tig Notaro's lines, whether it's partially ad-libbed or not.
Mm?
And apparently it's not. It's all scripted.
Oh. That's too bad.
And she's just got a really good way of delivering it.
Yeah. Well, it's very well scripted, though, because it fits her character and her as an actress.
Oh, totally. It's been done for her.
Yeah. Right. While Odo and Roxana are stuck in an elevator, we are on Act 3. Odo cannot shapeshift out due to exposed electric circuits running through the turbolift's positioning mechanisms. So he is forced to put up with Roxana while the chief attempts to remedy whatever is going wrong. Odo tells Mrs. Troy that he would prefer to pass the time quietly. However, naturally, Roxana isn't happy with that, while also noting she tends to be attracted to quiet men. And she starts telling Odo about the time she was held captive on a Ferengi ship along with her daughter. Odo begins to seriously consider risking the exposed circuits.
Desperate means desperate measures.
Yeah. It was not paying any attention to her in the beginning.
I don't think he heard anything she said at all.
No, I don't think so.
She's incapable of reading the cues, though.
Yeah.
She's not picking up anything about Odo not paying attention, clearly wanting to commit suicide in order to get away from her. Okay, that changes. We know this. But, yeah, she's just so singular of purpose, so focused, so blinkered. She just hasn't got a clue what's going on.
Is it that, or is it that she absolutely hates being silent or being in silence? You know, she has to talk, she has to speak. That she would say anything anyway because he's not talking, so she needs to feel the silence.
Feel the silence, yes. Another possibility is that it is a stress coping mechanism. She may be frightened. And at this point, we don't know this because she's not shut up yet, so we've not had a chance to work it out. But if that's her coping mechanism for stress, that she talks, I know a lot of people do it, then it could be that.
I know people who talk even when they are not stressed, because when I was watching this, I was thinking of my own daughter when one day she woke up at 8 in the morning and at 10:50 she still hadn't stopped talking. So, hello, Monica.
Hello.
Monica has joined us in the Twitch chat. If you want to do that next time we record an episode, we will give you all the details at the end of this episode. Where were we? Yes, we were at the point where Odo was clearly thinking about ending his life. In Ops, Bashir begs Commander Sisko to relieve him of his escort duties. Sisko refuses, telling the young officer that he himself had to do the same and, in fact, Curzon took a perverse pleasure in giving him the unwelcome duty of escorting important guests, until the day Ben punched one of them for trying to force a young unsane into his quarters. Sisko ends the discussion by warning Bashir not to hit any of them, since he won't be as forgiving as Curzon. I was sad for Bashir. I was like, you're very not lucky. I wouldn't have liked to be in his place at this time, being the escort for those.
No, absolutely not. See, this is the weird thing. So, in a previous episode, we Monica said, haha, you felt bad for Bashir. In a previous episode, we established that Bashir outranked O'Brien, which surprised me at the time. And yet, they give somebody who is a comparatively senior member of the ops crew that job. Well, you would have thought, in terms of ranking, the best person to have given it to would have been O'Brien, because he's lower in the pecking order.
But is he considered command officer?
I would say so. He's head of engineering. Chief of engineering, sorry.
Which makes him senior officer, but does it make it command? Jordi never was command. He was one of the senior officers, but he never really got any command roles.
Is Bashir command? Is that how it works?
Don't know.
Monica said, but he's not commissioned.
Who?
O'Brien's commissioned.
O'Brien?
Hmm. Yeah, he's chief petty officer. Well, I don't know if, well, it's a rank, but I don't know whether it's a military rank or not.
Also, O'Brien has been in Starfleet a lot longer than Bashir. It's his first assignment. Bashir's first assignment.
Yes.
Yes. So maybe there's that too.
And also, we can't ignore the fact that Miles has another job to do right now that's very pivotal to the episode plot.
Yes. Chief O'Brien then tells Sisko that he's having a problem with the computer. Or rather, he isn't. As strange as he admits that it sounds, O'Brien claims the computer seems nicer somehow, even since he downloaded the information from the probe. Additionally, every time he leaves Ops, a new problem comes up, as if the computer wanted him to be busy. Da-da-da.
So here, we kind of encounter a problem that we've mentioned multiple times before. You get a probe, or something or someone, and you are investigating it, you maybe interface with it, you maybe plug a dock into it or something, I don't know. And whatever that entity is, whether it's a computer or it's a life form that's not been encountered before, it has the ability to change how things work. Now, in a computer system, you should have safeguards to prevent that from happening. Otherwise, you could encounter something that just completely reprograms the entire purpose of how this station will operate. And yet, as always, this thing is coming from nowhere. They've literally picked up a USB stick off the pavement and plugged it into their computer.
Yeah.
And they're like, they got, it's not working properly.
We've got our files encrypted. Wow. Yeah. And now they're asking for bit latinum.
A bit latinum. Romulan ransomware.
Yes, something like that. Yes, that's true. That's the same with people transporting directly on the bridge of the station or of a spaceship or in Ops or
exactly the same.
They've never heard of firewalls and honeypots and stuff like that.
See, I've never actually been able to see a complete view of the outside of DS9, but I'm guessing somewhere along the side of the docking ring at various different positions is the Wi-Fi password.
Yes, probably.
So rather than, that's not the guest Wi-Fi, that's the command Wi-Fi.
Yes, that must be that, if they have a password at all.
That was an assumption on my part, yes. Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, we're on to Act 4. Sisko meets with Dax and Kira in Ops, and they attempt to come up with an explanation for what is happening. Dax hypothesizes that the information in the probe might be a type of sentient, non-biological life form. O'Brien suggests it's not malevolent, as it's not doing damage, so he suggests uploading the probe's file back to the probe. However, Sisko and Kira realize that it may be time for Odo to regenerate, meaning it will revert to its liquid state unless they can get him out of the turbolift. When O'Brien attempts to re-download the information into the probe, the lights go dim and the station shuts down.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. That didn't work as expected.
It didn't.
No, that backfired.
I suppose that's even worse.
Yeah, and one of the ambassadors brought a very good point. She said, I think it was Madame Ambassador, of whom I forgot the name. She said, is it only the light or is it also the temperature? And that made me realize this space station is in the middle of nowhere in deep in space, hence its name, Deep Space Nine. And if there's no heating, then the temperature will drop very, very fast, quickly, probably, and very, very low. So, yeah. Good question from one of the ambassadors. If O'Brien is a competent chief engineer, why didn't the backup come online?
Yes, but obviously nobody would have the heart to tell her that no number of blankets, shawls, coats, jackets, or anything will keep her warm if the heating does go out.
Indeed. Mm. Indeed. In the turbo lift, Roxana finishes talking about her life and asks Odo if he wants to talk about himself for a while. Although it takes a while for him to open up, Odo starts to tell her about how he began his life being studied by a Bajoran scientist as he learned to become self-sufficient. He then begins to tell the Betazoid that after that he tried to fit in by entertaining people at parties, which is why he hates parties so much now. Roxana tells him that if he goes to one of her parties, she will make sure everyone will be there to entertain him. Odo finds that despite his initial reluctance, he is starting to appreciate Mrs. Troy's company. However, Odo is also starting to feel pain as he tried to hold off his need to regenerate. I was very sad, and I was feeling for Odo. Having to not being able to regenerate, he looked in real pain.
Yeah, I found that scene quite moving.
Yeah, the whole thing, the whole end of this scene is very touching.
Very touching. It made me realize actually what Roxana was, what her made her be who she was, because you find out a little bit later on that she isn't who she appears to be.
No.
She puts on a mask, as most people do. So even though she's not willing to reveal her true self at the moment, and Odo is clearly not willing to reveal his true self either, I think the fact that she's trying so hard to kind of break him down and make him realize that actually she's somebody that could be a friend, despite her obvious intent in other directions. That, I don't know, I just loved the whole setup of this.
Yeah. It was great.
Because she was trying really, really hard to make him trust her.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, O'Brien has come up with a plan to distract the lifeform that has taken over the station. As he slowly tries to cut it off from the station system, Sisko, Dax, and Anara give the computer increasingly complex commands. The plan seems to be working, but something goes wrong, and the system overloads. A fire erupts in one of the corridors where Bashir is escorting the ambassadors to their quarters. They are trapped.
It's a trap!
It had to be that corridor, of course.
It had to be that corridor, and it also had to be that special effect. The same one I believe they used last week when Kira got hit by a ball of flame that didn't actually exist. I am certain it's the same one.
It's the same cheap one that really shows that it's a show from 1990-something?
93, I think we're in.
Yeah, probably.
There was something in my notes about this being a particularly low-budget episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here we go. The Forsaken was written as a bottle show to save money at the end of the first season. I'm just trying to find out what a bottle show is because I haven't got a clue. Oh, it doesn't even mention it on the article links to. But I presume it just means that they've tried to like pull things together as cheaply as they can do in order that they can have some money left for the finale.
Well, they did a good job, except for this crappy special effect, but the rest was pretty good.
But again, relate it to the fact that we're 28 years in the past, in our timeline, that actually was a pretty decent special effect. Not Hollywood blockbuster style, but certainly more than the kind of thing you'd see on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Absolutely, yes. So Monica says a bottle episode is basically an episode unconnected to other arcs. So that would fit the description and the episode.
Okay.
And also, you know, they had Roxana and Odo stuck in an elevator. So that's just one set. Nothing to build.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Totally.
Ops was already there, obviously. We're on Act 5 now.
Wow.
Breaking through the doors, sealing Bashir and the ambassadors in the corridor, will take longer than expected, so Sisko and Kira start working on it. In Ops, O'Brien comes up with a plan. Thinking of the life form as a puppy, he realizes it thrives on attention and begins to build a dog house, although Dax has no idea what he is talking about. Well, Dax, I have good news for you. Me neither. I was like, what? What are you going to do? It's like the... what did he invent last time? Something for the satellites, you know, when Sisko was trapped on the planet where those people never died. He invented something.
Oh, the magnetometers.
Something like that, yes.
Diametric magnetomers or something, I can't remember.
No.
Yeah. I understood the puppy analogy. I got what Brian was talking about, that it's something that was... If you have a puppet, well, you know you have Nanook, but if you have a pet of any kind, what they crave is attention. You give them attention, they'll be happy. You neglect attention, and they'll be on at you all the time. But the idea of building a doghouse for it, well, if you build a doghouse, that's normally to put a pet into, well, a dog into. That's not giving it attention. So I couldn't work out how the puppy analogy that worked related to a doghouse, which doesn't actually fit the analogy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I was like, "What? You want to put him in a cage or something? That's not going to work."
Right. Monica says clearly the Trill never had a Tamagotchi.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have to build a house for your Tamagotchi, or you just have?
No, you just feed it, give it attention, and clean it. I think the very basic functions of the earlier, the proper Tamagotchis, the genuine ones. Mm-hmm. were fairly straightforward. Yeah. But yes. I suppose to some extent that's exactly where they are now. They have a Tamagotchi pet inside the ops computer system.
Yes, that's a good analogy. As Odo begins to lose his ability to hold his shape, Roxana can see that he is in pain. Yet he turns his back towards her and refuses to show his weakness. He tells her that he is not ashamed. It's just a part of himself that he'd rather keep private, and no one, other than the Bajoran scientist, has ever seen him like this. Just then, Mrs. Troy holds forward her hair, revealing it to be a wig. No, really? Wow, I'm surprised. Odo turns around to see Roxana with her real black hair tightly pinned up, telling him that no one has ever seen her like this. Odo assures her that she looks fine, but Roxana tells him she looks ordinary, something she's never cared to be, and she herself changes who she is from time to time.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting, because personally, I thought that Roxana looked a lot more sophisticated without the wig.
Yeah, I get that.
I suppose it is completely all about how the individual feels about themselves. And the changes they need to make in order to believe for themselves that they look better on the outside with that change, with that adornment on them. And yet, I kind of figured that she was wearing a wig before she told us.
The fact that she changes her hair in every episode we see her is kind of a hint.
I don't have the benefit of that, because I've only seen her a couple of times in the series in Star Trek at all. but it she didn't look natural in the way that she was. But when she took the wig off and you saw she had pinned up black or darker hair, I'm thinking, what are you doing? Why are you making yourself look like this when actually you look perfectly well, perfectly good without it on? But it's nothing to do with what I think. It's to do with how she feels.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
So a lot of the Star Trek is not about learning about the characters and learning about the people and the storylines within the show itself. It's a self-learning exercise as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we try to relate and identify, and then we may discover stuff about us that
precisely
maybe we didn't know.
Yeah.
Odo tells Roxana that she isn't at all like he expected, and Roxana gratefully accepts the compliment and kindly offers to take care of him. Finally, trusting Mrs. Troy, Odo transforms into his liquid state and houses himself in a fold in her dress.
Another incredibly moving scene.
Yes.
Because you could see Odo's process of deciding that he was going to put his complete trust in her and allow her to look after him, which is what she said she wanted to do.
Yes.
All right. So two things to consider here. In fact, no, you could put it down to one thing. One thing to consider here. He was stood on the ground.
Yeah.
So how did he end up in the fold of her dress? She would have had to have been stood in her dress. Otherwise, he could have poured the top half of himself in, but the rest of it just would have gone on the floor.
Yes. Yes, that's one thing. Also, we don't know, you know, we've already talked about that. Does Odo change his weight when he's liquid or when he's transformed? Because if she ended up with the weight of a grown man on, you know, in her dress, good luck with that.
I hadn't thought of that one. Nice. Yeah, well done.
And also, hopefully, you know, his liquid form is thick enough to not go through the stitches. Yes.
That's the bit I wasn't going to mention because I thought it kind of came under the whole... He would have ended up on the floor anyway, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But except for that, for those 3 or 4 points, it was a very moving and touching scene.
It was really good. Monica said so as well. Yeah. Pretty amazing scene.
Yes. Pretty amazing scene, yes. I agree. Kira and the others continue to try to get into the corridor while O'Brien prepares to set his plan into action. He sets up a special program through which all station commands can be performed, transferring the puppy into the doghouse. Satisfied to be at the center of the action, the life form returns the station to normal. So, if I understood well, he rerouted all backup functions from the station through this program. So, I guess we could see that as the puppy would have stuff to play with, I guess, to try and grab. Hopefully he's not going to change anything, because if the backup functions go through the sub-program and then suddenly they need the backup functions and they are changed by the puppy, well, that's going to be a surprise. But I don't know, maybe it's just, you know, one of those, when you have a light beam and a cat and the cat runs after the light beam, it can't really do anything to the light beam, but it's still... a good toy.
Yes. I'm trying to work that through in my mind, because it's not something I'd thought about necessarily. Possibly we're taking the puppy analogy a little bit too far, because, you know, I'm not expecting all the backup systems to be put into a particular corner of the room and then the puppy goes up and wheeze against it, for example. So I'm not quite sure what a puppy could do in this. No, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. You put too much in there, and then something happens, and you can't get them back out again. You're totally right.
Well, it doesn't really matter, because we don't hear about that puppy ever again. So, I guess maybe no. died. And
no.
As a result, Sisko and a team finally manage to enter the corridor where Bashir and the ambassadors were trapped, and the fire suppression systems begin to work. After being briefly thought dead, Bashir and the ambassadors emerge from a conduit, sooty and disheveled, but completely uninjured, with the ambassador's opinion of Bashir considerably changed, having been quite humbled by the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so they were on first name basis now.
Well,
so
well, this is it. At the beginning of the episode, Bashir was told to refer to the female ambassador as Madam Ambassador. And then by the end of it, when he called her Madam Ambassador, he said, "Call me whatever her name was." I can't remember.
Yeah. He probably did a good job reassuring them and trying to get them to safety.
Yeah. And it could have been a really good confidence booster for him, because the conversation he had with Sisko at the beginning of the episode was very much of a distinct lack of confidence, distinct lack of ability in himself to be able to cope with the circumstance that Sisko had put him under. But if you put people into an isolated room where they are naturally uncomfortable, they have to adapt. They have no choice. So he's had to adapt to this scenario. Only one of two things can happen. He either succeeds or he fails.
Or they kill each other.
I would say that was a failure.
Yes. So John said that the fire suppression system had to turn on because of the hotness that was Julian Bashir.
Let me just think about that for a moment. No.
Well. See what you did, John. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, Odo and Roxana finally emerge from the turbo lift, shape and wig restored. Odo thanks Roxana for her company, telling her that can't have been what she intended for a picnic. Roxana assures Odo that all that really matters on a picnic is the company, and promises him they will meet again. Actually, I think she said, "You will have a lot more to be grateful for when we meet." So I think she's still on her
never misses
initial
a chance.
Target.
Yeah, well, totally, yeah. Totally. But did I detect a little smile there from Odo?
Yes.
It was very subtle, but it was definitely there.
Yes. So I wonder, how long did they stay in that turbo lift? Because he needs to turn back to his liquid form, but I suspect he needs to stay like that for a while in order to, you know, regain energy and things like that. And well, it seemed to me like as soon as he turned into a liquid, then the O'Brien managed to, you know, get the puppy out of the system and everything came back to normal. So there's a little bit of continuity error, I would say, or maybe timing.
Potentially, yes.
Something like that.
I mean, we know that Odo can last up to 16 hours without regeneration, although we were just entering the 15th hour when he started really struggling with discomfort. So it's not 16 hours. But what we don't know is how long the regeneration takes, how long he has to sit in his bucket for. You would think that it would be close enough to align with Bajoran time, but that means he would be in the bucket from anywhere from 10 to 12 hours. And I don't think that's the case. Yeah. I don't think it can be.
No, and that wouldn't fit with the episode. But
no,
that's okay. We can forget that. It was still a good scene.
Yeah,
and I love the when you know when they get out of the elevator. Roxana was still putting her wig back. You know, as what you would expect from someone having done things, quote unquote, and then coming back to civilization.
Nicely put.
Yeah. Sisko asks O'Brien how he resolved the situation, and he explains he isolated it into a subprogram, but not sent back to the probe. Surprised, he suggests keeping it around. O'Brien assures him it won't bother them, and he'll give it attention. Sisko tells him to keep it off the furnitures.
No piddling in the corner.
Nope.
So they have their Tamagotchi now.
Yeah, they do.
Well, O'Brien does.
Yeah, O'Brien has his digital pet.
A digital pet, yes.
Yes. So, what did you think of the episode?
It was great. It was a really good episode. I don't care that it was put in as a bottle episode, as they put, or that it was done just to save a bit of cash. I think it was a really great character building story for Odo. I mean, we've had one for him already, but this kind of goes a bit more into his origins, how he feels about himself. Yeah, I think that's probably about it for Odo. It was good to see Luoxana again. She's always a character to enjoy. There wasn't really much of a storyline. I think the whole pro puppy thing was a bit of a non-event. I didn't find it particularly entertaining. I didn't find it particularly. I didn't think of it as the A plot at all. No. I don't know whether it was intended to or not.
I think that's the bottle episode effect.
Yeah.
Where they just throw cheap ideas and, we've got this idea, this half-baked idea, and this one, and let's put that together, and that's going to give us an episode.
But the weird thing about it is that although it wasn't the best story, and it wasn't the best effects, and it certainly wasn't the most expensive episode they've ever produced, I still really enjoyed it. And it wouldn't be in my top 10 necessarily, but it's certainly not nowhere near the bottom. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good, really good, really liked it.
I agree with that. I thought it was a great episode for Odo when we learn a little bit more of the origins of Odo. It's interesting to learn that he was experimented on, which explains maybe a little bit of his personality. We also discover things about Luoxana, even though she's been on Next Gen many times already, because it's like the sixth season of Next Gen at this point.
Yes.
I believe that Luoxana is someone who's talking a lot and is very exuberant, because I think deep down she's a little bit lonely, and she uses this exuberance and her ability to talk people to death as a way to feel a bit important in this world. And it was very interesting to see that she revealed herself, which is something we never saw before in Next Gen, if I'm not mistaken. So I thought it was interesting too, on her point. The whole Bashir story, I thought it was there just so that we had the pity on Bashir, and that contributes to the let's like Bashir a little bit more plot. I think the writers had. You said last week, I think, that you started to like Bashir a little bit more. I thought this was a part also of that. Suddenly you realize that, he's actually like every other officers, and he's got that very weird task of escorting visitors, guests, and I felt for him.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I really want to say this, but in keeping with the whole idea of trying to build up his character and help us as viewers identify with him more and understand more about how he ticks, you definitely saw a lot more of the unsure, the uncertain, the unconfident Bashir than you normally see, where he's obviously putting on some kind of barrier to make people think that he's this happy-go-lucky, literally just about to walk on stage to sing an opening number. Whereas in this particular episode and last week's episode, you actually saw a bit more of who Julian Bashir actually is.
Yeah.
Those are the stories that I like, the ones that give you a little bit of an insight into the person that they don't actually want you to see.
Yes, agreed.
So I certainly agree with what you said there. Yeah,
the puppy plot. Well, it's just they had to fill the episode with something. So I guess when I watch, well, it's the third or fourth time I watch this episode. Every time I watch this episode, I'm like, oh yes, that's the good episode with Loxana and Odo. And also I immediately think, oh, but that's also the episode with the puppy. So it's weird because that's the part of the story I don't like because it doesn't really make sense. It's just a filler, I guess. So
yeah.
Monica says, oh, just wait, Bashir has some fun depth. So yeah, we'll have to review 6 more seasons of Deep Space Nine.
Over the next 14 and a half years.
We're coming up to the end of season 1 of Deep Space Nine. So
we are. I think I've actually worked out what the date is going to be of episode 20, which is something we'll have to talk about in a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you have some trivia for us on this episode?
I do, actually. It may not surprise you to learn that this episode is one of René Auberjonois' favourites.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, he felt it was really important in the early development of Odo's character, helped to establish him and give him more of a dimension than he'd had up to that point. He also observed that the episode was successful at giving the audience an insight into his personality. So through his relationship with Loxana, the audience was introduced to an aspect of him that made him more endearing and more relatable to. You're able to connect with him. Which I totally agree with.
Yes.
That was the first of 3 appearances of DS9 for Majel Barrett as Loxana Troi. Her next appearance in the chronology is actually in The Next Generation, but then she appears in DS9 again in Season 3 and Season 4.
Okay, we'll see that in a few years then.
Yes. The scene in which Odo somehow ended up in Loxana's lap, apparently 4 CGI artists were involved, and they used several thousand 3D spherical shapes to combine their surfaces. So there was a kind of a bubbling, moving essence inside of the glob that poured into Majel Barrett's lap.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. The running gag concerning Troy's love interests. In one scene, Odo is anxiously looking around as he exits a turbo lift, fearing running into her, which he obviously does. Jean-Luc Picard acts similarly on the Enterprise when she is on board the ship in The Next Generation in the episode Half a Life, which was in Season 4, so prior to this.
Yeah, Picard always tried to avoid Loxana, and she always tried to find him.
Right.
Or Riker.
Kind of like Q, or really. Both. But for different reasons.
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
Pup is never again mentioned on screen.
No.
It is mentioned in a DS9 novel called Valhalla, and it is believed that the program Pup was probably destroyed after the activation of Program Cisco 197 by Kira in the 5th season episode Call to Arms. Program Cisco 197 was a program designed to sabotage and disable all major systems in Deep Space Nine shortly before the Dominion War began.
Okay.
Cisco prepared the program when it appeared likely the station would be captured. So essentially, it was kind of a elongated self-destruct mechanism.
Okay.
I presume.
So, yes, I was going to say what Monica said in the chat. So Kira killed the puppy.
But
boo-hoo.
Basically, yes. Yes. Yes.
Boo-hoo. Yes, earlier Monica said it would have been cool if if Puppy ever came back.
Yeah.
You know, like, it ended up saving the station at some point or something.
I was thinking more like Holly from Red Dwarf. You ever seen Red Dwarf?
I haven't seen Red Dwarf.
Oh, no. Okay. Listeners will probably know what I'm talking about. It was a human-like manifestation of the ship's computer. But it had an attitude. A real attitude.
All right.
So okay. Just imagining that Pup would manifest and evolve to the point where it starts, kind of like the computer does on DS9 now with O'Brien. Gives attitude, okay. Argues, gives opinions.
Right. I'm going to have to try and find that if it's on one of those streaming services that I have.
To be honest, if you just look for Red Dwarf Holly on YouTube... Yeah. or any other video streaming service like that, you'll find loads and loads of examples.
Okay, I will do that. Is that it for the trivia?
That is it for the trivia.
All right, so this ends our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode, I don't remember, The Forsaken. Thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by training a digital puppy to go around the internet and leave traces of our show on as many computers as possible. Or if you think this could backfire and turn the internet into a pile of goo, you can simply share the address of our website on social media. And I can see Dave, you know, doing the face palm.
I've just got this image of a digital puppy going around and leaving traces. That's as far as I got. Oh, no. And you can find our website at tlgreyhot.org, where you'll find all of our show notes, all of our reviews, and you can leave a comment at the bottom of every one of our episodes.
If you want to send us feedback via a antiquated mean of communication, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org.
And of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those is TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast. And if that wasn't enough, we also stream our recording of these episodes live on Twitch over at twitch.tv/TEGH Podcast.
I love how consistent we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always. We have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license. You can find all the details about that on our website somewhere.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for all our guests and shows. And well, we were talking with Monica about something, and maybe there's something that's going to happen. And if that something happens, maybe we're going to have something to announce in a not-so-distant future.
Our next episode will be our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 18, Dramatis Personae, or something like to that effect.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
It wasn't, but that episode will not be next week.
No. It won't be next week. It will be in 3 weeks because going away on vacation. Yay! So, yeah, sorry, no episodes, no live recording in 1 or 2 weeks. Next live recording will be in 3 weeks, whatever that is. If I quickly go to my calendar, I can see that it's going to be August 4. So we will see you on Wednesday, August 4.
We still have a few episodes to put out.
Yes, somebody forgot to publish an episode.
Yeah, well, we're not going to dwell on that, are we, Yannick? Yeah, we've got a few more to get out, so you're not going to be completely without TL Greyhot.
Although by the time you listen to this, well, you will be out of episodes.
That is a very good point.
See, you really should be on in the live chat room when we record this, so that you don't have to put up with our very poor, editing schedule. talking about the live chat room, thank you, Monica. Thank you, MacAttack20. Thank you, Ossibet and Benz Ryan for joining us in the chat room. It's always a pleasure to see people in there. You can chat between yourselves, and occasionally we read your comments and start laughing. that's great. That is all for this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, once again. It's really great to have you with me on this show.
Right back at you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening, for joining us, for downloading, for whatever. We will see you in 3 weeks. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya. Just bear with me a second, because I've just realized I've missed a great opportunity. One sec.
think you missed the opportunity to show one of those bubbly liquids. The ambassadors interject a bit during the
Am I jumping the gun a little bit here?
A little bit, I think.
Scrap this. I'll come back to it. Uh-huh. I'll come. Well, okay. We can just.
You're editing, so.
Yeah, yeah.
In the turbo lift, Roxana finishes talking about her life. I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
Oops.
Hello.
The Jedi hand signal. No.
Yeah, mentioning the Jedi hand signal. Yes.
This is not the hand signal you're looking for.
you can stop.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.